Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Rod Kinnear. Rod is the author of the book, Don't Waste This Storm. In the book, he discusses his secrets of perspective shift during the storms life sends your way and how it allows others to experience things that they never could have imagined. And we're going to be here today talking about the storms in his life that he's gone through and how he's found that new perspective and helped him navigate through those storms. So welcome to the show, Rod. I'm glad to have you on.
Scott, it's a pleasure to be here. And I first of all want to thank you and all the veterans who might be listening or families of veterans for your service to our country. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. And we were talking before we started recording here. And one of the things that I feel very fortunate about is that I get to live through a time when there are people like yourself who are very appreciative of the work that the men and women of the military do, and not just the military, but first responders and everyone like that. Because not too long ago in our nation's history, and you were talking about this yourself, but there were those people who didn't appreciate it and outright resented the military and the stuff that they were doing. So having someone like yourself come on, thanking people, to me, that's a breath of fresh air, knowing that there's still people out there who do appreciate our service. And so I appreciate that. And I thank you for your perspective and your attitude on things as well, because that's definitely appreciated as far as I'm concerned. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background before we get more into your story, into the book, and why you've written it, and how it can help some people. So, a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I'm here in Michigan. Like I was telling you earlier, I grew up in kind of a blue collar family. My relatives were factory workers or farmers, and I always knew I wanted to help people. And somehow, I asked a pretty dental hygiene student to dance at 18, and let's just say that was the beginning of a 40-some year history. I became a dentist. I always wanted to serve people, encourage people. And after 8 years of being a dentist, a lot of people don't know this, I actually sold the practice, took four kids, and I went to the seminary. I was in church work. I left dentistry for a 10-year period, then came back to dentistry 20 years ago. And when I came back to dentistry, I didn't realize, but something that I faced as a businessman really affected how we went through my wife's health situation. I purchased two dental practices, two retired dentists back in the early 2000s in an area that's predominantly General Motors factories and workers, kind of near where I grew up. And within a year or so, General Motors filed for bankruptcy and all of the retirees lost their dental insurance. And I told my dear wife, I said, we're highly in debt. We could go bankrupt. And I literally realized right then, I looked at my staff and I said to them, we're not just going to survive, we're going to thrive. I used those words back in 2006, seven, whenever it was. And we did some creative things. I worked in other dental offices. We paid it off. I didn't go under. So then you fast forward a few years and my wife's go after a 2-year health, really bad health storm that wasn't terminal. She has a weird blood test and we find out she has terminal cancer and they give her 18 to 24 months to live. So that's kind of the backdrop. And she passed away 6 months before COVID hit. And in early June of 2020, I was feeling a little down. And I thought it was because of May was Mother's Day, the first one with Beth in Heaven. Our anniversary was the day before Mother's Day, the year we got married. And I realized that's not what I'm feeling hopeless about. The George Floyd situation that occurred in May, and I felt the hopelessness of our country. And I had thoughts of writing the book, and from what we learned going through terminal cancer, and that's what stimulated me to start writing the book. And that's where Don't Waste This Storm, and the subtitle really says it all, hope-filled thriving, not just barely surviving the storms of life, came about.
So I mean, that's a good, you know, background of who you are, but I want to go back a little bit and kind of dig into some of this. So, your wife of 40 years, right, was diagnosed with terminal cancer, right,
well, like you mentioned. Like 37 at the time, but yeah.
Okay, so almost 40 point, right? I know we all die at some point, right? That's just a reality. It's death and taxes. Those are the two things that you can count on. But the death of a loved one is never easy to bear. Someone who you spent so much time with, before we started recording, you were talking about how you had this partner that you were going through life with that you could rely on. And now she's not here. And that's not an easy thing to deal with. Did anything change in your relationship knowing that any day from the point that she got that terminal diagnosis, any day forward from there, that it could be your last together? So did anything change in that relationship? And how, if so, how did it change? And what did you guys do to navigate through that?
Right. Well, I think I learned a lot about being her support and advocate. And I think of spouses of veterans who come back and are dealing with things. I learned a lot about that, but I think the initial reaction I talk about in the book, when you're hit with a storm of life, whatever it may be, is to kind of hunker down, isolate, quit living, and wait for the storm to pass. And a lot of storms are defined. They will end, but some, you know, they could go on and on and on. And I think that was the initial reaction we had. And in the book, I talk about the perspective shift. I call it, I couldn't put this into words as we were going through it, but as I reflected back, I call it the who, what, when, where, why, and how perspective shift. And I think any storm, it could be, you know, coming back from the service, it could be losing a loved one, it could be cancer, it could be financial, relational. I think that there's this initial reaction is to say, why me? I'm a good person. I've served people, whatever, and you wear yourself out saying why. And then the second question is, when is it going to end? And you wear yourself with that. Well, there are certain storms, like, well, even COVID. You know what I mean? And I saw that in the people around me when I started writing, when is it going to end? And then the third one is, how can I get myself out of it? What do I do? What can I put my energies into? Research, whatever. You know, I realized, Scott, the first two questions, if you believe in a higher being, only God knows why or when. And yet the energy expended, and to me, that's all, it's a victim mentality. It's a pity party mentality. And not to say we didn't have it. I did. I mean, we were going through another health storm and then thinking we're almost getting through it when, wham. And my wife was the kindest, gentlest, most grace-filled serving woman on the face of the earth. So I started to say that. But then a few months later, she was spending 3 weeks in the cancer ward at University of Michigan. And we had moved out of that, but I said something to her that was just, it said it all. I said, you know, Beth, it's not about us. And she knew what I meant. I said, you know, it's not about us. When I told you about the who, when, when, where, why, how, well, I did the why, the when, the how. Now let's do the what, the where, and the who. I realized, what were we supposed to do with the gifts and the experiences we had had up to this point in our life, where we now found ourselves, which could be hospitals, clinics, cities we never planned on, with who is now around us. And when you take that mentality, you start to see opportunities and purpose. And we took a cancer care unit. I'm going to say somebody higher than us was working through us. But you want to find hopelessness? Go into a cancer center where there's virtually everybody's bald. And they're not the guys that have hereditary baldness. They're women. And all of the curtains, shades were pulled in all these rooms. But they want you during your chemo to be getting exercise. You got to walk for miles around this cancer ward. And my wife started putting encouraging sayings on her window. She put some Bible verses, put thank yous to the staff of that floor. And I would purposely do my quiet devotion time in the family lounge instead of my wife's room. And we would just encourage people, staff, janitors, people we'd see. By the end of the 3 weeks, we saw so many more windows open. encouraging little sayings, we didn't do anything that big. But what that does for you when you're in the midst of a storm, there's that saying, it is more blessed to give than to receive. I'm getting shivers, but it's like, that is what we discovered. My wife, I mean, she physically was doing awful, and yet it just lightened her up. So yeah, that perspective shift. And I think our human nature is to, I told Beth at one point, about a year into it, she wanted to start making videos for her. We had 11 grandchildren at the time. We now have 13. She wanted to make videos for their big events. And I remember saying to her, when you start preparing to die, you're going to quit living. She never made the videos, but as my book will show, the things we did, she was in Romania on her forced mission trip of her cancer. When they said, you can't travel, your immunities are too, you'll die. And she gave a testimonial in this little village. And she talked about, you know, when you're in the storms of life, go, listen to God and go. And then at the end, she looked at those Romanians and it was such a blessing. She summed up what I'm trying to tell you. She said, you know, when we come to Romania, everyone tells us how blessed the Romanians must be. She looked at those villagers. She said, we receive more from you than we give to you. And that was what we found that gave us that strength in the storm, serving others.
Yeah, and you find a purpose in serving others, right? You're in that cancer ward trying to get treatment for, I'm talking about your wife at this point. So she's in there trying to get treatment for herself. And every day she probably wakes up thinking, okay, I have to come up with something motivational or a Bible verse or something that's going to help other people, to bring light to their day. Because like you said, you walk outside that room and all the shades are drawn. It's dark. It's not that bright, encouraging environment that you would hope to have. Right. So now, instead of focusing on the doom and gloom of her own diagnosis and her own situation, she's now thinking of, how do I help this person down the hall who maybe doesn't have family who's coming to visit, or this other person who is maybe getting close to their last days, to help them see some bright message, some encouragement, some positivity, some reason to keep fighting. And that becomes the new mission. I know when you were talking earlier about how you start to think, why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to my family? So I lost my brother in Afghanistan while I was deployed there as well. And I remember that night after finding out that he was killed, that I remember just yelling out and saying, why him? And, you know, it was me talking to God, like, why would you do this? Why would you take such a good person from us? And in that moment, I realized that I'm not going to know the answer. Only God knows the answer. There's an answer out there, but maybe I'm not meant to know the answer. And I just have to be okay with that. And from that point forward, I kind of just stopped asking why him, why not me, you know, all that kind of stuff. I stopped doing that because I realized, what good is it going to do? If I keep beating myself up over this, what good is that going to do? It won't bring him back. It won't change anything. It's just going to just make me go crazy trying to figure out the answer.
Well, and the other thing I realized after her passing, but it also, we're still here for a reason. And if we're spending our time grieving or angry, and so many people are, there's no value to their existence. They can't be used. And I'm not saying it's easy. And I'd be another to bring up to veterans, because it sounds like, oh, just serve people and everything will be great. I talk about four things I found that really helped us not just survive, but thrive. Service was one, but one of them is community. And what I mean by that is, I think, like I said, I'm a person of faith. I think the devil does his best works when he can isolate us by ourselves. And didn't COVID do that? Nothing against the government. I'm not saying that, but due to it, we were all quarantined, and then our mind gets going and we go in this pity party pit. And then even Facebook and on, I didn't want to be a part of Facebook because everybody was just spewing anger and frustration. And I'm going to talk a little bit later, if I have time, about the not-for-profit, my wife's name, Be the Hope. But I started a Facebook group and I said, this is to talk about simple acts, being the hope to others. There's no talking about politics, no talking about anger. And if you are, I'm taking you off. But I believe good things happen every day. Let's talk about that and let's raise our spirits. And my hope is this book, we can drive that thing into millions on Facebook. But yeah, Be the Hope. So community, and I think we luckily were part of, I don't want to hold us up as, oh, we had it all figured up when the storm hit. We luckily, I had a breakfast, men's breakfast that I went to once a week. She had a woman's group, and we started a couples group in our home. So we were in community. And I wonder, when that storm of terminal cancer hit, if we hadn't been in community, would we have had the energy to seek it out? I'd like to think yes, but I think so many people don't. And I think the other thing is everybody thinks it needs to be a community where you're all, I don't know yet. I'd have to talk to counselors, but does it need to be people that are going through terminal cancer? Does it need to be people that are dealing with PTSD? We had people in our groups going through stuff. And a lot of times I get up for that 6 o'clock breakfast thinking, oh, I got to go because I need it. More times than not, Scott, I was supporting an older guy whose wife was sick or had just died. I mean, this was like, a year before Beth passed. And I just think being in that forum of just doing life together, there was a value, not that it's the same difficulties or same storms, but I don't think most people, when the tough times hit, they wall off. And that was a key for us not doing that.
And it's easy to isolate and not do anything, right? Yeah. When you don't feel like getting out of bed in the morning because you're so depressed or you're so just sick of dealing with things in life, it's easy to just not do it and just stay in and not go out and socialize with other people or do the things that you normally would have done. Right. It's really easy. And, humans are, I don't want to say humans are lazy, but we like to do the easier thing. We tend to gravitate towards that sometimes, right? We're looking for that comfort, and if something is a little bit hard to do, we're gonna tend to stay away from that. Not 100%, but it just seems like that's the easy way to do things. And like you were talking about, like when you're dealing with a loss of any type, sometimes people think that the grieving process is just something we need to just get through. We just need to make it one more day and eventually it just gets easier with time, right? That's not necessarily true. But that's like survival mode thinking. That's not the thriving that you were talking about, right?
Yeah. Well, and I went to a grief recovery group right after Beth passed away for 6-8 weeks and all the stages of grief and dealing with anger and all that. And I didn't have a lot of that stuff, but you paid to go to it. You got this booklet and you could repeat it as many times as you want. Beth died in August. So in January, I thought I'd go back. And this was just prior to COVID hitting. And I went to it and it was like, I don't need to keep grieving. I need to go to somebody that answers the now what question. Now that I don't have a partner, what am I? And the same with like veterans, I'm thinking, okay, I'm back. I'm out of the service, whatever. Now what? You kind of get used to this way of life and how do I fit in? And I can't imagine. I've never thought some of the parallels, but huge. So yeah. I remember there was another widow that had gone through that last one in the fall with me. And I said to Marty, I said, what do you think? And she goes, yeah, I know what you mean. So this social widowers group in Grand Rapids, they do once a month social event, had contacted me. So I had an email list and I contacted the leader and I said, I want to start a group for widows and widowers and use some of what I did through cancer to see if what worked in cancer would work for people who have lost loved ones. And I said, we found encouraging and serving others lifted the depression, got rid of it. And I remember she said to me, oh, that's way too much. That's way too much for a widow or widowers after they've lost a loved one. So then COVID hits. About a month into the self-quarantine, I texted her a message. I said, could we talk? I goes, you know, there's something worse than losing a loved one. She goes, what? I goes, put self-quarantine on top of it. She goes, oh. I said, could we try my idea on Zoom? So she gave me a couple other widows. I had a couple I knew. We started with five. And we did it for about a month. And I remember June of 2020, we had our first meeting together in a park, socially distanced. And as I talked about a neighbor or a coworker praying for them, encouraging them over a few weeks, you could see the difference in their demeanor as they got out of looking inward and pity party to just trying to look outside of themselves. So it worked. And I wonder with veterans, like I said, there's so much with the VA and other things. I don't know the exact parallels, but I think some of these things in my book, sometimes reading another journey, what I did at the end of every chapter, I have what's called refuge reflection questions. And it's a way to take the storm we went through and use some of the concepts to apply to their storm and see, is there something here I can learn? And that was what I was really doing with widows and widowers. And it works. It really works.
Yeah. And part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show is because it is a different perspective that you have. It's not, you don't have the military background. You didn't have combat experience or any of that kind of stuff. Oof. But there is still a parallel between the military service and the type of storm that you went through, in that there's this transition and there's this change in who you are and who you identify as, right? For all those years, you identified as someone who could rely on coming home and having this partner that you were with to be able to talk through problems and go through the, you know, just day-to-day life, just the things that you were dealing with. You were able to rely on having that person around. Now, all of a sudden, and it's like ripping off a Band-Aid, where it's like, okay, here it is. And then all of a sudden it's gone, right? And, or flipping a light switch, whatever analogy you want to use. Right. It's a completely different world that you're now living in. You don't have that person around, and there is some grief that goes along with that. You obviously have to grieve the loss of that person, but when you think about the military and the military service, when you leave the service, you had identified for all those years that you served, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years or more, you've identified as a military service member, and that was a big part of your identity.
Who you are, right?
Exactly. And then all of a sudden, you take the uniform off for the last time, and now what are you? You're a veteran, but what does that mean? You know, and what does that, what kind of status is that? There's nothing really that goes along with that, other than, you know, some benefits at the VA and a free meal on Veterans Day at Applebee's or whatever, you know.
So I hope it's more than that, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but it's a big change and it's a big shift in who you are. And so when I heard your story initially, I thought of the different parallels. You know, at first, obviously, there's not that direct military connection, but again, like you said, sometimes hearing somebody else's story in a different perspective, in a different situation, might help you to pick out some pieces that can be helpful to you in your life. So
I just thought another piece I think helpful for veterans. I talk about four things that were helpful to us to thrive. One was service. One was community. The third one is gratitude, an attitude of gratitude. And my wife had gone through months and months and months of insomnia with her other health situation prior to the cancer. I mean, awful, awful, awful. And one night, it's got to be a God thing, because I'm just not that creative. I said, Beth, let's pray the ABCs, or if you're not, you know, a prayer person, say the ABCs of gratitude. She looks at me. I said, you say something or someone that you're thankful for that starts with A. I'll say something with B. You say C. And we had Z covered. My son-in-law's name is Zach. Scott, we never got to Z the rest of her life without her falling asleep. And I think that from focusing on what you don't have, what you wish you had, why I've been wrong, to what you do have, that was huge. After she passed away, you know, 40 years of marriage, I started doing that every night because I wasn't falling asleep. I'm telling you, I just, that's not our nature to do that. We're focusing on what's not right, what we wish we had. Like even through COVID, I went through COVID different than everybody else. I just had a different perspective. And I, you know, it was like, that's what motivated me to write the book. But gratitude, I can't say enough about it.
Well, and as you're talking about that, talking about the things that you do have and not the things that you don't have, I think back to my time when I was in Afghanistan and going into some of these villages where literally they have mud huts for houses that they're living in. Their walls are mud. They have straw roofs, and they're very primitive in terms of, you know, what we're used to in how they're living. They don't have electricity running to the houses. They don't have running water. That they sometimes have 15, 20 people living in one small, small building. And yet the kids that are outside playing, they might just be kicking around a ball that is falling apart because they've had it for years and years and years. And it's the only thing that they've had. You know, they might have gotten it from one of the soldiers who came through 10 years earlier, and that's just the only thing that they have to play with for the whole village. And they're happy as can be. They're not sitting there worrying about, okay, why don't I have electricity so that I can have television and an Xbox and the internet and all this other stuff. They go out and they just make the best of what they have. And I think by focusing on what you have versus what you don't have, it gives you the ability to be much happier. You know, and honestly, I think in some of those cases, some of those people just didn't know what they didn't have.
They didn't know what they didn't have, exactly.
You know, they didn't have the internet to go on to go look to see how Americans live and compare their lives to somebody else the way we do with social media, right? You go on social media and you're comparing your day-to-day life with somebody else's A game that they're posting on social media. Yeah. And so you look at that and it's like, oh man, I wish I was that cool. And I wish I was that good at whatever. But they don't have any of that stuff. And that gives them the ability to just focus on what they do have. And they were happy.
We found out the same thing going on those mission trips to Romania. Like I said, I just came back and realized I needed to slow my life down.
Yeah.
And I have a chapter in the book, which, like I said, this book has so many lessons. We had a relationship with an oldest son restored in the midst of her terminal cancer. I have a chapter called Storms of My Own Making. When we're kind of stressed and not at peace, we think it's somebody else's fault. Maybe you've made the choices and thought you could do things faster than you could or whatever. And, you know, and usually everything was about serving other people in the community, the church, my five kids, but I was doing too much. And I learned that in the book. But like you said, it started by going to Romania and seeing people with almost nothing, more at peace than I was. So it's like, wow. So yeah, so gratitude. And then this one maybe doesn't make sense, but you know, in the midst of, well, and I'm thinking a lot, I'm realizing the spouses who have someone come back and they're not the same. And this, which was what I had, my wife, you'd ask how our relationship was. When you have those traditional wedding vows, richer, poorer, sickness, health, better, worse, the last 5 years of our marriage was not health, was worse, and richer or poorer was poorer. I didn't work a lot and whatever. The best 5 years of our marriage were the worst 5 years. And I it doesn't make sense, but it does. You begin to realize what's important. And I learned to serve my wife. I don't know if you heard of the five love languages. Gary Chapman wrote this book a number of years ago. And my wife's love language was acts of service. I wasn't doing it on purpose. But what do you think I did the last 5 years of our lives? I served her, I served her, I served her, I served her. And she felt loved. I thought, man, if you've never read that book, get it. And you need to start saying your wife's love language. Like I said, we always had a good marriage, but I was doing her love language, not intentionally, just I had to. It's what she needed. But I learned how to support her, and our marriage grew. And I'm thinking some of those veterans that come back, you know, if we can encourage the spouses who I'm sure this is a different person, how do I do it? That if they can find ways to encourage and they can have that relationship again, it's going to be different, but it very well is going to be better. So the fourth thing I bring up, which is laughter. You're thinking, what do you mean? Laugh when you have terminal cancer? Well, what are you gonna? You want to cry? But laughter and support. I guess both and. I mixed them. One night, I could just see I'd up my game as the supporter of the one going through it. And I just said to her one night, I said, Beth, what can you ask? Or no, I said, what's today? She goes, Monday. No. She goes, April, whatever. No. I said, I'm going to give you the answer. Today is the day you love me more than yesterday. That night, I said to Beth, I said, what's tomorrow? She's not, she's smart. She goes, the day you love me more than today. Yep. And then I don't know, a few weeks later, she's the one that always served everyone. I said, Beth, what can you ask for? And then I gave her the answer. She'd always have to repeat the answer. I said, anything, anywhere, anytime. When I was going to seminary, I had a prof who had sons the same age as my oldest son. He told us this. It was a counseling class I took. He said, I tell my sons this every night before they go to bed. I love you no matter what. I did that for the next 15 years, 20, whatever, parenting. At our 30th wedding anniversary, our middle son was about 20, and he gave a toast. And he said, Dad, you always told me. And he had some moments, stupid moments in high school, but when there is that underlying knowledge of unconditional love, they know that. I even think with kids with sports, you know, they almost think, well, if I don't do well enough, you won't love me. No, no matter what means all the time. And I think I took that thought to Beth. She heard what's today, what's tomorrow for the rest of her life until the 2 days she was unconscious before she passed. And I think that the support, and it goes both ways. When you show love, you receive love. She became more demonstrative in her love to me, not that she wasn't, but that one, but now the humor. So the other thing is I talked about doing the ABCs of gratitude. Well, you got to bring some humor, some support. So I finally, I would do this occasionally. I go, A is for adorable Beth. B is for bodacious Beth. C is for, D is for drop dead gorgeous. And I said, X is for, you know, and all the smile on her face, you know, months away from dying, you know, but the best one was in terms of humor was, what's your name? She goes, Beth. Beth Kinnear? No. Beth Fritzler? No. I said, you got to say it. I'm going to keep asking it. Do you repeat what I tell you? She goes, what? I goes, Rod's hottie. My wife's this quiet, mild-mannered. I can still see the blush. Well, then later I would say, and I don't know German, but I know the two words for hot grandma in German. But that smile, we think you can't smile when you're in a tough situation. You got to smile. What's the other is, it just lightens the moment. And people think, well, that's being, you know, you're not honoring the pain they're in. I don't know. It worked for us. And I think it works.
Yeah. And I think that laughter too, because it's important, because if you are spending the last days of your life having that pity party and just sad and, you know, just beating yourself up, I mean, that's not, you're not giving her the best that she can have at, you know, especially towards the end there. Yeah. And even for you going forward, you know, obviously you're still here, but your memories, thinking back on those last few months, you're able to sit here and tell us the story and with a smile on your face, right? And you have, I mean, it's hard, but you do have those good positive memories that you're able to laugh about and still remember in a positive way. And I think that's important too, to be able to hang on to some of that, that fun and lighthearted moments.
Well, and I, you know, as I was thinking about when we first talked about the Be the Hope thing I'm doing, because that made me think I want to connect with the veterans more, because my vision, my wife had a favorite Bible verse, Jeremiah 29:11, that talks about hope in it. And she hosted a young moms group from our church. Right when she was diagnosed with cancer, they asked her to do it, and she said no, because we hadn't told anybody. And I called our pastor's wife up and I said, Beth will do it if I have to make the meal and serve it. So she would make a dinner for 25 young moms every month, did it all 3 years of her cancer. Well, the year before she passed away, and she's 2 years into the cancer, she was given 18 to 24 months. She started what's called the Word for the Year. She gave them a little canvas and they could paint their word. If they want to put a Bible verse, they could. Her word for 2 years into terminal cancer for 2018 was joy. So we get to 2019 and we decided to go on a vacation down south. We thought the cancer was in a short remission in 2018, came back in the fall and she started chemo. So we go down there, we get back, and she hosts the young moms, first one of January, and she did the word for the year, and her word was hope. And she put her Bible verse on a picture, I'm looking at it, it's right across the room. And the next day we go to the oncologist, no warning. He was a great oncologist with not a lot of people skills. He said, have you thought about hospice? I'd give Beth 3 months to live. You know, so there we are. So about a week later, I'm sitting in church and I see Beth's name and I see Be the Hope. And I wrote it in my journal. And it wasn't until I told you about going on that mission trip and her giving her testimonial 5 days after we got back, she opened her eyes in heaven. And about a week later, I called up, I got on with Vistaprint where they can do business cards. And I described this and that's what they designed. It was like, wow. But so, yeah, so Be the Hope was an idea. I have the not-for-profit status. I'm working on the legal end of it. Oh, one other little thing. What does a couple do when they're a year into an 18, 24 months terminal cancer sentence? There's an abandoned Girl Scout camp across the road from where we lived in southern Michigan, and we bought it. It had like an old 2,500 square foot building built in the 50s. Mostly wooded with on a small lake. And we're going to be opening that, I hope. There's not enough energy here, Be the Hope Retreat. But, and I put in the back of my book a lot of my visions for what it is. But when I started the Be the Hope Widow Widowers group, I told them it wasn't a support group. And there's a time when you need support, you need professional counseling. When I wrote the book, I was kind of putting in the epilogue some of my vision for the future, and I realized I don't want to call them Be the Hope support groups. I'm going to call them Be the Hope purpose groups. Because that sinful nature, we want to just be a victim. And I see so many people in our country want to be a victim, or the government wants to encourage them to be a victim. Everyone has a value. No matter what situation, you have gifts. You have something to give someone. And that's what I want Be the Hope groups. And I never had thought of veterans or veterans' families until we talked last week. And I thought, yeah, to get in an environment where I mean, I don't have all the answers. And it's not instantly you do that and everything's great. That's not where I'm at. But over the course of best 3 years, it's just more and more we started to find out, yeah, to see that purpose where you're at. I put in the book, it's not where you're at, it's who you're with. And I think some people, the situation's got to be right, the job situation, the where I live, the what I have. Believe it or not, that veteran and their spouse or their children and who's around them, their family, that's what makes their life, and not that other people don't. The year before Beth passed away, we had 5 kids. We didn't go on dates enough, you know, and we were getting close. The last one was in college and we're down to, I think, 2 still in the house. And we were driving to a funeral dinner for one of her cousin's parents. And I, on the way, I said to her, I said, "Well, we're on a funeral dinner date." She looked at me. The whole point was we were by ourselves connecting for 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's all that matters. So now you fast forward a 3, 4, 5 years. I gave her a diamond ring when I was, and this is in the book, when I was 19 years old, dead broke in college, that $400 ring, I thought I was going to die. But on Valentine's Day. Well, when she had inpatient chemo, we were spent Valentine's Day in the hospital. And I went out and I couldn't have real candles. I got the votive candles and my daughter decorated like Beth would decorate. I bought her a red blouse to take her stuff off, you know, her hospital garb.
Hospital, yep.
And they had steak on the menu. And I took the song that was our first dance, "You Make Me Feel Brand New," and I will never forget the tears running down her face. Mm. It was our best Valentine's Day. It was in a cancer ward. And again, everyone wants to define their life based on the circumstances. It's all about your perspective. And like I said, we learned a perspective shift. Unlike most people where someone dies quickly, this isn't me being arrogant, Scott, I don't have a regret. Those last 3 years, the second last chapter in the book is go big or go home. And we just did, just live. We at different points, we're going to cancel doing anything we're leading in because, oh, what if Beth gets sick? What if we can't? Isn't that what you do when you get hit with a storm? You just, again, you disconnect. We didn't go to my 40th class reunion because it was in September and she might be scheduled for inpatient chemo. She got diagnosed in June. That was the only thing we canceled in the next 3.5 years. She didn't do inpatient chemo till January. And we found that. And if we have to cancel, someone will step up and take your place. But, you know, just live. But that's not, like I said, the tendency is the pity party, the isolate, the wall off, and just be a victim. So if that's all you get out of this book, or what I'm saying, or the be the hope, that I think that's so huge, that the mindset.
Yeah, and when you think about the people that you've lost, right? In your case, your wife, but yep. You know, there's other people who are listening that they may have experienced a loss of another type. If you think about those people and who they were, the types of people that they were, would they really want you to just stop living and just sit around wasting your life? And for what? What good is that going to do? Just sitting around and not doing things, not experiencing everything. And then you're eventually, everyone eventually is going to get to the end of their lives. And then they're going to look back and say, man, that was a waste. What did I accomplish? What did I experience? What did I do? All because I was sitting there having my pity party for the last X number of years. What good is it?
Well, and I think we do that even without the loss of a loved one. If with any storm, that's the tendency. And I've run into a couple widows who, and actually the one husband was a veteran, but they have kids in the house now. And I kept thinking, how could you do a Be the Hope group to get these kids? I mean, they're never going to have a dad. Mm-hmm. And yet to somehow honor their memory and somehow take their memories, the gifts, the blessings of their dad, and apply them to other people in their life. Is there a way to see purpose, have a purpose group for them? And then I thought with veterans families too, in some way, because like you said, there's no value to the pity party, but that's all of our tendencies. I think that's
it is.
A human nature thing.
I think it is. Absolutely. Yeah. And then when you hear stories of people who get over that pity party and they go off and they achieve all these great things in their lives, it's like, wow, that's so inspiring. And how are you so strong and able to do something like that? But it's, again, it's that perspective shift and just kind of changing your mindset.
Yeah, but I got to say, the big thing I want to add to it is I'm noticing, because I moved to Grand Rapids, I lost a lot of my community. I've tried to fit in, and then things have changed. I told my one daughter, I said, I need to find a new community. Because you can do all these things, and I look like, look, he's on fire. He's doing great. If you do not have people around you, you're going to get sucked into that victim vortex. Ooh, that's a new one. I never used that, but that's good.
That's a good one. Yeah.
And I'm noticing it right now this week. It's like, okay, where can I get out there, you know, and get involved, get around people more. And I think that's the, cause yeah, I mean, I can sound like this rah, rah cheerleader, just start serving people to be better, or just start laughing. It's not that easy. There's gotta be that support. And yes, it might be spouse to spouse, but it's more than that. It's more than that. It's gotta be other people. That would be if all I could say, and we luckily had it prior to the major storm hitting, and we were a little more mature too. We'd done life a long time, but really in our marriage, we didn't have that support. If we got hit with it, I don't even want to know how ugly I would have gone through it. It would have been awful.
Right. Yeah. And with the military, sometimes it's hard to have that type of support because they're constantly moving, you know, every couple of years, they might be moving from one base to another. And so getting around, you know, a group of people that you can have that community and that support from those other people could be difficult, but there are groups of people on various military bases and they get together for different activities, different things.
It can be athletics. It can be recreational. Exactly.
Exactly.
You're going to laugh. There's this sport called pickleball, which I laugh. Yeah. When I was in college, I played racquetball. Well, retirees play it. Well, I'm hearing it's moving down. The average age is down to 50. Well, I finally played it. It was a whole new community of people that right. I wasn't. So what communities like that? And it could be through your kids, if you're parents and you meet some parent. Well, then you take the step and say, hey, can we go for a coffee? You know, you try to connect, but that would be the biggest thing I would be in these, be the hope groups. If this movement takes off, like I hope it does, is I can't tell you how much that is the most, to me, as important as anything.
It is, absolutely. Well, Rod, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today, and I'm sure we can go on for hours and hours talking about this stuff, but I want to give you a chance to let people know where they can go to get a copy of your book, Don't Waste a Storm, and any other last kind of closing thoughts that you might have for people?
Well, again, I just, again, to thank the families, not just the veterans, you know, it's a, it's a generational thing with many of the veterans' families. Thank you. Thank you. Remember this whole Be the Hope movement. If you want to be part of it, go on Facebook to Be the Hope. And it's a public trying to start a movement. I mean, we all want the government programs or faith-based organizations to change the world. I've always said, I think it's just one good act of kindness at a time, or as I say, one Be the Hope moment at a time. So that would be that. You can get Don't Waste This Storm. You can get it on Amazon. Westbow Press was who I published it through. And and I don't have a website for Be the Hope, but if someone wanted me for speaking, I'm rodk@bethehope.net. And or they could go on the Be the Hope Facebook page and find me that way. But anyway, I can encourage veterans or in some way help. I'm there for you guys.
Okay. And I will have links to the book.
When I say guys, that means men and women. Okay, that's in Michigan when we say guys. Okay.
Yeah. No, understood. I think that was that is understood. But we'll. Okay. Make sure that everyone is included in that as well. But I will have links to everything in the show notes, to your Facebook page, to your link to the book and everything, so that people can find it. If they want to check it out, they can grab a copy of the book. And I really do encourage people to get it, because I think having that perspective shift and changing your mindset on how you're thinking about things and getting out of that pity party, like you were saying, it really does help move things along and make things better. So I appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspective, and hopefully some people are out there listening to this and taking it to heart.
That's the only reason I wrote the book, so there can be a value to what we went through for others. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.